You're with Greg Carrick and David and Ned coming up with Have a Little Faith.
Marvin Gaye singing our theme song, What's Going On? And that's what the name of this program is. We're coming to you from the downtown studios of Healesville 99.1. And this is Dave, and I'm joined with Ned. G'day, Ned.
G'day, Dave. How you going, mate?
Good, mate.
It's good. Good to hear. Long time no see.
Yeah, it's been ages. Five minutes, even.
Probably about 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
So, where are we starting tonight? I'm
looking I reckon you ought to say g'day to Shirl.
How the hell are you, Shirl? Can't hear the reply. But you know what? I've got a great joke from Shirl. She sent a joke in just the other day to me, and I thought I'll probably read this joke out. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon that'd be a good idea.
All right, so it's about two drunk men, and I reckon we'll call them Ned and Dave.
That's a bit mean.
Ned and Dave. Okay, so two drunk men, Ned and Dave, were returning home from the pub. And walking along the railway tracks, as you do when you're returning from the pub, Dave said to Ned, gee, these steps are so far apart. And Ned replied to Dave, well, I don't know about the steps, but these handrails are really low.
Oh, good one, Shirl.
Yeah, good on you, Shirl. That was a great joke. We like that one. We're laughing. In fact, I can hear you laughing from outside
laughing.
The studio.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Laughing all over Hillsville.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's a good... Shirley, I love her, Shirl. She's just got a great sense of humour.
Great train of thought there.
Great train of thought. Oh, very good.
That was clever from Greg, I tell you.
Great train of thought. All right.
I see what he did with that.
Mm. So are we going to go into some music or what's happening here, Dave?
No, I reckon that we ought to say g'day to a couple of people that Shirl's with.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah, Robert and Lynn.
Robert and Lynn.
A cheerio out there. Thanks for taking Shirley off our hands.
For the weekend or for the week?
Well, until Tuesday, I think.
Until Tuesday.
Back at Zach's Place Drop-In Centre, which just happens to be on Wednesdays from 10 till 4 in Yarra Junction, Ned.
So she'll be back for that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. Well, I hope you're having a great time relaxing, Shirl, and listening to the radio like I know you would be. Wouldn't you be, Shirl? Yep, I think so.
But listen, mate, this next song I can't introduce. You've got to introduce that. It's by a young bloke called Elvis.
Yeah, no, this next song, it's a pretty special song. In fact, it's a song that Elvis only ever sung publicly once. So he never sung it in any of his shows, but he did sing it on the 68 Comeback Special, which was a TV show that came on, as I said, in 1968. And the song name is If I Can Dream. Now, there's a backstory to this song. Elvis Presley was a great admirer of a couple of people, but now just, isn't that fellow just lost my train of thought?
Yep.
Let me think of it again.
It's because of us walking along that
Robert,
train line.
Robert Kennedy had just been assassinated, I think, in that year in 1968, and Martin Luther King had been assassinated a few years beforehand. Yep. And Elvis was a great admirer of both of those men. Anyway, so someone wrote a song, and this was the song that they wrote. And when Elvis read the lyrics, he thought, I've got to sing this song, and I'm going to sing it. And as I said, he only sung it once, and it was on the 1968 Comeback Special. So why don't we listen to that song right now? Thanks, mate. Let's go.
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in the sky. More blue, if I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand. Tell me why, oh why, oh why can't my dream come true? Oh why? There must be peace and understanding sometime. Winds of promise that will blow away the doubt and fear. If I can dream of a warmer sun where hope keeps shining on everyone, tell me why, oh why, oh why won't that sun in a cloud with too much rain. We're trapped in a world that's
you go.
How about that, mate? Pretty good song, eh?
Oh, amazing song. An amazing song. I hope those that are listening really took in the words, not just the music, but the words to that song, because it speaks volumes.
Yeah, good stuff. Ned, we're going to be doing something special tonight. We're talking the whole show about human rights. And Ned's got some stuff on his mind that he really wants to share, and we'll have a bit of a conversation around that. And it'll apply to human rights for a lot of different people groups. But as soon as I talk about human rights, some people in the Christian setting anyway sort of think that it's a topic that the Bible isn't concerned with and Jesus isn't concerned about human rights. But nothing could be further from the truth, actually. Mm. If you look back in the Old Testament at the law and the prophets, I mean, it's all about human rights, you know. The law is laying down how to look after each other and how to make sure that everybody's okay, common ground stuff, and not only Israel but the nations as well. And, yep. And then the prophets, you know, speak into when it all went wrong. The prophets speak into the fact that you guys are not looking after each other and really need to pay attention to that. And then, of course, we come over in the New Testament with Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus' Sermon on the Mount really it's almost a statement of human rights.
Yep.
It could be looked at it that way. So, Ned, you got some stuff on your mind, mate. Do you want to start the conversation going?
Yeah, I would. You know, look, what I'm going to be speaking on is controversial, and I understand that there'll be those who disagree with my point of view, and that's okay. But I want to look at where we stand as a society when it comes to social justice or injustice issues, and also the understanding of human rights within our culture. Now, this is a culture far removed from the days of Jesus physically, when Jesus physically walked the earth. But our culture, and especially of those who follow Jesus and his teachings. Now, the recent event of the government banning 13 1% motorcycle clubs, or what are described as outlaw clubs, wearing their patches in public, could be seen as a social injustice or even an abuse of human rights in a society where free speech and expression is supposedly allowed.
Yeah, but just a minute, Ned. We probably need to stop right there. I mean, you're a part of God Squad, a motorcycle club, and you know that's fantastic. You've been there for what, 40 years, I think.
Yeah, just a
And the media seem to have a lot of negativity around the 1% outlaw clubs, but I'm not really sure. Well, I am now because we've talked about this week, but I reckon you ought to tell our listeners what is a 1% club and what does it mean that it's an outlaw club?
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, Dave, that's a good question, and I guess I take it for granted that I know what I'm talking about in regards to this sort of thing because I have been a part of God Squad for a lot of years. But to explain the answer to your question, we have to go back to the 1940s in the USA. Now, some veterans returning home from World War II, they didn't fit back into the society they left to go to war. You know, their experiences of the war had changed them. And they were young blokes, and they found it hard to settle down to a mundane life of post-war America and needed some excitement, you know, some adrenaline sort of stuff. So getting motorbikes and riding with their mates gave them that excitement. So they'd go on weekend runs or they'd be drinking and unwinding. And that was the way that they, their answer to getting away from a boring, mundane existence after the chaos and the tragedy of the war that they'd been in. So they wanted to celebrate freedom and non-conformity to mainstream culture and loyalty to their bike riding or their biker mates, who had also gone through the war and had difficulty fitting back into the mainstream society. So at this time in America, there were motorcycle events and weekends for those that enjoyed the freedom of riding motorcycles, not necessarily in clubs, but just with others who enjoyed the motorcycle experience. Now, one of the motorcycle weekends was in a place called Hollister in California. Now, this was a peaceful little town where every year people would come to enjoy each other's company, have a good time as they rode on their way up to Hollister. But this particular weekend was a different weekend because there was a group of young veterans back from the war and they were also in Hollister and they were having a great time. They were drinking, being rowdy, racing their bikes up and down the main street, and they're creating a lot of havoc. So the police were called and a few young blokes were arrested and they were put in the local jailhouse to sober up. They weren't in that jailhouse for long because their mates decided to tear down the old wall of the jail and get these guys out.
The whole wall?
Yeah, and that's what they did. They did that. So the media got a hold of this, and of course the media loves a good story, and they made a huge issue out of the situation to which these young guys, when they were confronted, they said they were 1% of the motorcycle fraternity. That means they are outside of the law. That's the way they explained it, where they had their own rules and they weren't sanctioned by the American Motorcycle Association, which the synonym for that is AMA, and they didn't adhere to the AMA's rules. Instead, their group or their club, whatever they wanted to call it at the time, had their own bylaws reflecting their own rules in their bike culture as they saw it. This is where the term outlaw biker and 1% came into the existence because of these blokes who were young fellas back from the horrors of war.
Right.
So that expression, 1% and outlaw bikers, became the terminology used to describe groups of men riding American bikes, and we're talking America, so Harleys, which are an American bike, were mainly the bikes they rode back in the 1940s. And this terminology of outlaw came into the bike culture in Australia, and once American clubs became like international, where they formed their own chapters of clubs in other parts of the world, they started here in Australia, and the term 1% followed as those clubs in America already had designated themselves to be 1% of that bike culture.
Oh, right.
So it became a natural term to describe other motorcycle clubs who believed their club didn't adhere to the standard requirements of other social motorcycle clubs as 1%ers.
Okay, all right. That helps me to understand the 1% idea, and I'm sure listeners have been tuned into that. Maybe a lot of you already knew about that, but it's good to be up front with it. What do you reckon?
Yeah. Well, you know what else is interesting, and that's that Jesus was considered to be an outlaw back in his society by the religious leaders and those in authority over the general population. And they were scared of him too because he was different from the ordinary person. So, you know what, I reckon Jesus had a 1% attitude. You know, and you know why, I'll tell you, because he liked celebrating freedom. He displayed non-conformity to the mainstream culture and a loyalty to those who found it difficult to fit into the culture of the day. So the similarities of who Jesus was to the similarities to the 1%er, if you like, are very, 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 very much the same.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of differences too. You know, Jesus was a peacemaker and probably wouldn't have pulled down the wall of a jail to get his disciples out or something like that. But at the same time, that he was very concerned about the down and outers, about people who were doing it tough. And I think he would have been hanging around 1% clubs and hanging around the bike culture if he was here today.
Oh, no doubt, you know, and hanging out with others too that are considered to be not part of the right part of our culture.
So our next song, Man in Black, mate, it speaks something of that, doesn't it?
Well, look, Man in Black, Johnny Cash, again, the words to this song, fantastic. The tune itself is great too, but to hear Johnny Cash sing about why he wears black is something that we can all sort of admire, I believe, in how the man thought. And his, I guess, his stand on issues that we're talking about right now today here.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back, and why does my appearance seem to have a somber tone? Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time. I wear the black for those who've never read or listened to the words that Jesus said. about the road to happiness through love and charity. Why, you'd think he's talking straight to you and me. Well, we're doing mighty fine, I do suppose, in our streak of lightning cars and fancy clothes. But just so we're reminded of the ones who are held back, up front there ought to be a man in black. I wear it for the sick and lonely old, for the reckless ones whose bad trip left them cold. I wear the black and mourning for the lives that could have been. Each week we lose 100 fine young men. And I wear it for the thousands who have died, believing that the Lord was on their side. I wear it for another 100,000 who have died, believing that we all were on their side. Well, there's things that never will be right, I know, and things need changing everywhere you go. But till we start to make a move to make a few things right, you'll never see me wear a suit of white. Oh, I'd love to wear a rainbow every day and tell the world that everything's okay. But I'll try to carry off a little darkness on my back till things are brighter. I'm the man in black.
Yeah, Dave, I'm just thinking, I actually think there was some sort of a jailbreak in the stories in the Bible. Can you just reflect on that for a second?
Oh, yeah. All right, I've been found out. You're right. Peter was, they didn't pull the wall down, but the angel came and opened the gates, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, Greg, you did a good job of just reminding us of that. Well done.
That's one for God.
It is.
One for God.
And probably more than that, eh?
Yeah, I reckon so.
We don't know everything.
Anyway, getting back to this. So getting back to the banning of wearing colours or back patches for these 13 1% bike clubs, I'd really like to understand the government's ideology or their reasons for doing this. You know, I think if we look at the justification on these particular laws the government has put into place, there could be reasons to ask this government to please, please fully explain their reasons. Now, the bill brief of this new legislative law from the Parliamentary Library gives an accurate overview of the bill introduced by the state government following recent media scrutiny and a long-running statutory review of Victorian criminal organisation laws. The Victorian government has now introduced the Criminal Organisations Control Amendment Bill 2024. Now, on August the 28th in 2024, Minister for Police Anthony Carbines introduced the Criminal Organisations Control Amendment Bill 2024, the cinnamon to that is COCA Cocker, into the Legislative Assembly. The bill brief, which is available to the public, includes the executive summary of the bill and 8 subtitled sections which describe the reasoning for this bill to be introduced to the state of Victoria. Now, through this legislation, the government seeks to increase the effectiveness of the Criminal Organisations Control Amendment in preventing or disrupting organised crime. Measures include expanding the scope of anti-association provisions, replacing the existing declaration and control order scheme with a new serious crime prevention order scheme, and banning the public display of insignia for certain criminal organisations. Now, Section 3 of the bill is subtitled Outlaw Motorcycle Gangs, and we call them clubs, not gangs. In this section of the bill, what it states, while not all members of these outlaw motorcycle gangs or club organisations are involved in criminal activity, some estimates suggest that 3/4 of all outlaw motorcycle club members have a criminal record mostly related to fighting, traffic violations, drug possession, or disorderly conduct. Over recent years, there have been suggestions that while many older members joined outlaw motorcycle clubs for the camaraderie and brotherhood, younger members are more interested in status and opportunities for illicit profit. Now, at the conclusion of Section 3, it states, several high-profile incidents involving outlaw motorcycle club or gangs were reported in the media leading up to and around the time of Victoria's new legislation on organised crime, and these include the following. One, number one, a June 2007 assault on a woman by her partner in Melbourne CBD. A bystander who came to her assistance was killed, and the woman and another man were also shot. The assailant was reportedly connected to a 1% outlaw motorcycle club. And number two, a March 2009 incident at Sydney Airport where a member of a 1% outlaw club was killed during a brawl with another 1% outlaw club. Now, it's now 2026, and the number of high-profile incidents that are noted, there's only two there. Now, one in 2007, where the assailant was never a member of the club mentioned and was completely barred from any association with that club by the club itself.
So, wait a minute, they were saying that he was a member of the club, but he wasn't at all?
Yep.
That was not true?
He was not a member of that club.
Huh.
And that club actually barred that particular person from any association with that club.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, after the 2009 incident, it was between two clubs that didn't involve any members of the public. Now, this is not to say that this was okay, because
no,
it wasn't.
No.
But it was wrong to have any altercation such as this anywhere, especially in a public place. We all understand and we all agree with that. But it was a spur-of-the-moment scenario. It was not a planned event. It's like a pub brawl on a Saturday night in many pubs around Australia. And this is not to say these incidents of public violence are acceptable, because, like I just said, they're not. They're not acceptable at all.
Yep.
But these fights happen with many different people who are nowhere near any affiliation with a 1% outlaw motorcycle club.
Yep.
So, as stated in Section 3, while not all members of these outlaw motorcycle clubs or club organisations are involved in criminal activity, some estimates suggest that three-quarters of all motorcycle club members have a criminal record, mostly related to fighting, traffic violations, drug possession or disorderly conduct. Now, is this fair? Is this even real? Three-quarters of all outlaw motorcycle club members have a criminal record, mostly related to fighting, traffic violations, drug possession or disorderly conduct. Wow. You know, I reckon most Aussie blokes would have a criminal record then, including members of our own police force. Is this really a reason for not allowing all members of the 13 1% clubs in Victoria to wear their club colours? I really think that this needs to be taken further with this government. You know, Jesus knew all about discrimination. Jesus understood that some laws were just wrong and preached against them. This would have to be seen as civil disobedience in his culture, and it was. Do we recognise discrimination in our culture? And if we do, what do we do about it when we recognise discrimination in the culture?
And that discrimination, it's going a lot further than what you're talking about tonight. You know, this is one specific example, isn't it? But
yeah.
Discrimination against immigrants, discrimination against people who are doing it tough, like people experiencing homelessness, and discrimination against people who are addicted to various substances, and the list goes on and on and on, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, we tend to think, well, what are we going to do about it? Is the government doing anything about any of this sort of stuff?
Yeah.
You know, what's happening in our state and has already happened in other states of Australia is discrimination, I believe, against 13 1% outlaw clubs, and it needs to be challenged based on individual human rights and social injustice that accompanies these new laws the government has introduced. You know, Dave, there are 30 fundamental human rights established in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Now, this was adopted in 1948. The Victorian government believes they have addressed the human rights issue with the introduction of these new laws about these 1% clubs, but I disagree. Human rights are human rights. Those rights never change because they are human rights.
Yep.
You know, over the 30 fundamental human rights established in the United Nations Universal Declaration, number 20 stands out for me, and that is freedom of assembly and association. Everyone has the right to freedom of peaceful assembly and association. So the question I ask is, what's going on? Which is the title of our show.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yep.
You know?
Yep. You know, when I was in local government, I was a part of Melbourne City Council, a councillor with them. My portfolio was community services, and homelessness was a part of that portfolio. And I was told I was going to run again at the end of my four-year term. I was going to run again, and I was told by some well-known people in the city that, no, you'll never make it back in because there's no votes in homelessness. You've done a great job with homelessness and addressing the issues, but there's no votes in homelessness. Yeah. There's no way that you'll get voted back in. And they were correct. There was no way that I got voted back in. And, you know, a lot of these laws and rules that are coming through from government are in line with what's going to get me votes. You know, what are people going to vote for rather than the human rights?
Well, I can understand that. Charter. And I think I probably understand that and have understood that, particularly over the last few years when I've seen what's been going on just within in our society and also other societies around the world. Sorry, I just coughed. But where things are happening that governments had promised would never happen when they wanted to get elected.
Yep, that's right. Well, I reckon this is a good intro to our next song, which is from Four Non Blondes. It's called What's Up, and they're talking about what's going on.
Yep, let's hear it.
feel still. Time to get up that great big hill of hope for a destination.
You are listening to Have a Little Faith, Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
Getting back to what we've been discussing tonight, you know, bike clubs generally and inherently, they stick to themselves. There's no danger to the general public in the vast majority of times. Now, some people that are listening may remember the Milpera incident in Sydney in 1984, where this wasn't the case. But let me assure those listening, the bike clubs all over Australia disagreed with the way the two bike clubs handled that, because the incident should have been handled where no one would be hurt and certainly not in a public place. The members of any 1% outlaw club wear their insignia of their club's colours proudly on their back. Everybody can see who they are. There's no hiding, no harassment to those outside their 1% culture. In fact, most in these clubs want to keep clear of any trouble so they don't get indicted by the coppers, by the police. But currently here in Victoria, we have a massive problem with young people committing crimes in the community. Now, these gangs of younger people are not recognisable due to the hoodies that they wear while breaking into homes, terrorising families, stealing cars, acts of violence perpetrated in public places such as swimming pools and shopping centres. And we're constantly hearing of machete violence and threats by youth gangs fairly regularly. Is the government putting any sorts of bans? Are they banning young people from walking around with black hoodies on, you know, or anything like that? They're not doing anything. Now, I am unaware of any such ban on these young folk, so my original question is still unanswered. What's going on?
Okay, let me clarify something there. You're not calling for a ban on young people in hoodies, are you?
No, not at
You're
all.
You're just pointing out the discrepancy between the banning of the colours and the banning of the hoodies. And and those people that you've mentioned, you know, those young people who are causing some havoc in certain areas of Melbourne, you know, they're people who are estranged, and they're people who are in need of a lot of help. And, it'd be wonderful if and there are people coming alongside those people. But nevertheless, I get your point. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, look, everyone's got a story, Dave, haven't they? There's a backstory to everything that we hear, and I mean, we could talk on a whole program in regards to the background and the backstories that a lot of these young people are
facing.
That's
right.
You know?
That's right.
And so certainly not a ban. The point I'm trying to make is, you know, we can't see a lot of the time who these young folk are. The coppers probably know who they are, but we can't see. And stuff's happening that's terrorising other people.
Yep.
You know, so what is the real reason the government has banned certain 1% bike clubs for wearing their colours in public? Is this an abuse of human rights to those in the bike clubs? So I had a bit of a look at the current law here in Victoria. Now, the laws the government have brought in are titled Criminal Organisations Control Amendment Act 2024, and the adding of Part 5B to the Criminal Organisations Control Act of 2012, which makes it a criminal offence for adults to publicly display the insignia of colours of the 13 prescribed outlaw clubs, and the inclusion of further organisations may be considered in the future as needed. As needed. So does this mean that the government, at their discretion, can decide to restrict more bike clubs from wearing their backpatch or their colours? I believe it opens the door to this possibility. It just stands to reason. If they've got this power to do this to these 13 clubs, then they've got the power to do it to anyone that they want to do. So where do we stand? Where do we stand on this issue? Now, I'm certainly not condoning criminal behaviour, not at all. What I am saying is there are many organisations where people in organisations are involved in criminal activity. Let's look at some very big organisations. Well, for a start, any world governments, is there any criminal behaviour there? This is open-ended here. Our federal government, is there any criminal behaviour there? Our state government, is there any criminal behaviour there? Our police force, is there any criminal behaviour there? Our banking system, again, is there any criminal behaviour there? our insurance system. Is there any criminal behaviour there? And then we get down to the church. Is there any criminal behaviour there?
Fair dinkum, mate. That's a pretty comprehensive list, isn't it?
Well, it's a big list, and it's a list that basically affects everybody within our society. It's just there. And we know that there's stuff that's going on. You know, I believe there would be criminal behaviour in all those organisations, and also in smaller organisations like sporting clubs, etc. But does that mean that every person who is involved in any of the mentioned organisations is involved in criminal activity or is even aware of it? You know, just that's the reality. Are they aware of it?
Yeah, so in other words, just because there's some people in those organisations and in the bike clubs that you've been talking about, some of them are involved in criminal behaviour, doesn't mean that you punish the whole lot. It's like punishing the whole family for a rebellious child.
Yeah, it exactly right. The old saying goes, never judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
You know, never judge. So how can the government focus on the 13 1% bike clubs and judge all the members wearing the colours of the 13 banned clubs? Because our state government has labelled those clubs as criminal organisations and therefore all members are involved in deep criminal behaviour. That's just an absurdity. It's just not right. It's just not right. Okay, so, you know, we can look at the state government with what has come out just in the last week in the newspapers in last week's 60 Minutes program. It appears the government knew all along about the criminal issues of the big build here in Melbourne, and they did nothing. They did nothing. But yet the bike clubs are now the people we as a society need to be wary of because they are supposedly the bad guys and wearing their club colours makes us aware of them. So what's the answer? Yeah, so the answer as far as the government is concerned is to take the club colours off them and no one will know who they are. And I guess this is just like the white-collar businessmen who live in mansions, wear expensive suits and drive their expensive cars every single day while they hide their activity in the global criminal world.
Yeah, you know, you're going to talk in a minute about Jesus as a revolutionary. Jesus was a revolutionary. He came in and he sought to change things and overthrow some of the terrible things that were going on, especially in the name of religion, by introducing the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of God and what that was all about. And I reckon we're overdue for a reinstatement of that revolution, and that's what Martin Kerr sings about in this song, Overdue for a Revolution.
Beautiful.
The Democrats, they call me the answer to their prayers. As long as I don't sing that song about the billionaires, the redheads say they're gonna make our country great. But I can hear the masses cheer when they say who to hate. We're overdue for a revolution. Yeah, we're overdue for a revolution. The right boot and the left now, both stepping on our necks. They've got us at each other's throats, but we're not beaten yet. If we could see each other exactly as we are, the working class arise en masse, we'd take back all our power. We're overdue for a revolution. If you want to have a voice, give me your hand, we'll take a stand. We gotta make a choice. We gotta choose each other cause we're not enemies. We'll see the light pass left and right and get up off our knees. Cause we're overdue for a revolution. Yeah, we're overdue for a revolution. Yeah, we're overdue for a revolution. Yeah, we're overdue for a revolution.
You are listening to Have a Little Faith, Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
So, you know what, Dave? I just wonder where Jesus would stand with this scenario that we've just been talking about.
Yep.
And I believe that the Bible states very clearly where Jesus would stand. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 3 to 5, Jesus is talking here, and he says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye."
I bet you didn't win Prophet of the Week when he said that to the religious leaders, eh?
You know, but he spoke truth. Truth and power. Look, so many of the members of these 13 1% motorcycle clubs are fathers and grandfathers who have real jobs and real families and have nothing to do with crime. They love their bikes and their mates, and they gather at their clubhouse away from the general public, and they keep to themselves, very similar to those that frequent a pub on a Friday or a Saturday night to catch up with their mates. And, yeah, these guys ride together on club runs and weekends away. There's no drama. But let's not be naive about this. Some members of bike clubs would be involved in criminal activity, just like many within our society who are not members of a 1% motorcycle club. But as the law states, innocent until proven guilty. And as
in fact,
yet,
that's one of the human rights.
It is a human right. And as yet, since the government has produced in this new law, these bike clubs and all their members have not been proven guilty of anything.
Yeah.
They've just been banned from wearing their club colours. That said, let's speak truth to power, not just about the law, because the government has introduced a band-aid law to prevent organised crime, or indeed unorganised crime. Like Dave, you said before, I'm in God's squad, and I am, and I've been involved in this bike subculture for almost 50 years. It's about 47 years, I think, now.
Right.
And now the culture has changed in the last 50 years, but the vast majority of men, they haven't changed. I've known men in these 1% outlaw motorcycle clubs that on a daily basis work with the public. You know, I knew an international airline pilot who was a member of a 1% outlaw club. You know that? He was an international airline pilot, but yet he was a member of a 1% outlaw club. Yep. I knew a sociology professor at Sydney University who was a member of a high-profile, very high-profile 1% outlaw club. The list could go on and on, with men who are members of outlaw clubs who in no way are involved in any criminal activity at all.
Yep.
So, in my opinion, the government has no right to ban any members of any motorcycle clubs wearing their colours. If a member of a bike club has been found guilty of a crime and has been incarcerated, good, lock him up. Let him pay for his crime and hopefully be rehabilitated. But again, that's another discussion altogether about rehabilitation in prison.
Yeah, that's right, the whole thing of prison reform.
There's so much to talk about here.
Yep.
I just love the opportunity that we're getting to be able to bring some of these things up.
Absolutely, yep.
And speak about truth. Speak about the way that people understand or don't understand scenarios. But the truth is, in a lot of cases, the individual who's committed a crime would be kicked out of his club for committing the crime and bringing heat onto the club. That happens. When there's been a member that's been convicted of something, often he will be kicked out of that organisation completely.
Yep.
So let's understand, it is the person who commits the crime. That does not mean, I'll say it again, that does not mean the entire club. The right to wear club colours is a freedom of expression for each member of a club, whether it be a 1% bike club, a Christian bike club, or a social bike club. Crime comes from many avenues, not just 1% bike clubs. Now, in Luke 6, Jesus said, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned." And I say, prejudice is a great tool of the devil. That's all. Enough said. I reckon I've said enough now.
Good on you, mate. You've put it well, and it's a huge topic, and we're going to continue on this sort of discussion around human rights and so on. In fact, next week, maybe we ought to share the news with our good listeners about what we're doing on a weekly basis now, mate.
Yep. Well, as of today, we're on every Sunday night, every week, from 8 until 9.
That's right.
On this radio station's program, which is just wonderful because we get to say stuff that we want to talk about, and I think pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, great opportunities. And next week we're going to be looking at the issue of loneliness. You know, loneliness in some areas is called an epidemic. A lot of people are suffering really badly from loneliness, and the effects of loneliness can be really bad. So we're going to look at that next week. But we want to finish off the show today with talking about mates, and we're going to play a song by Walker Hayes called Craig, and Craig is the sort of friend that everybody would want to have. Walker Hayes, country artist, and had a problem with alcohol and didn't want to go to church, but his wife dragged him along, if I remember the story. The story can be read about in a book called Glad You're Here, a great book. And when he went along to church, he met Craig. He didn't know what church is all about, but he sure understood Craig because he was just a great mate. And really, that's what the clubs are about, isn't it?
Well, it is.
It's about mateship.
It's about mateship and brotherhood.
Yep.
And that's the bottom line with it, you know.
That's what the church is supposed to be about. It's about being mates. And so we're going to go out with Walker Hayes, Craig.
Craig at a church called Redeeming Grace. It's like he understood my I don't want to be here face. I felt out of place and I smelled like beer, but he just shook my hand, said I'm glad you're here. He says we'll all be judged, but he was never judgmental. And even though my songs don't belong in no hymnal, he quote me my lyrics, slapped me on the back, said man you got a gift, how you write like that. Yeah I know, he sounds cool right, not your typical kid from Sunday school right. I still ain't figured out church yet, but Craig, I get, now he can't walk on water or turn a Napa Valley red, but he just might be tight with a man that did. Now he's not the light of the world, but I wish that mine was bright as his. Yeah, he just might be tight with a man. A record deal, yeah, all the perks fade fast. Dealership said we're gonna need to get that minivan back. So we were down in one car, and broke as I felt. And my wife has six kids and only 5 seat belts. I needed help, but couldn't admit I was struggling. I said, Craig, it's all good, but he knew it all wasn't. Hey man, I'm praying for you would have been sufficient. But nah, he took roadside assistance to a whole nother level. The sacrificial heights. Showed up at the ballpark after my son's game. One night in 2 cars with his wife, Laura, watching from the other. I said, what in the world are y'all doing here, brother? He just laughed beside that old Chrysler Town and Country van with the keys and the title and a pen in his hand. Said, man, all you gotta do is sign and it's yours. I said, no, no way, but he wouldn't take no for an answer. He said, please do. Somebody did this for me once, just let me do this for you. We argued about it for a little while, then I teared up. Smile. Yeah, I know, he sounds cool, right? Not your typical kid from Sunday school, right? He can't walk on water or turn a Napa Valley red, but he just might be tight with a man that did. Now he's not the light of the world, but I wish that mine was bright as his. Yeah, he just might be tight with a man. Thank you. I signed the dotted line and I drove the kids home. And when a cop pulled up beside us at the light, they didn't have to duck, 'cause thanks to Craig, they were all buckled up.
You are listening to Have a Little Faith, Yura Valley FM 99.1.